Daughters. When Daniel Everett was a young man, he and his wife and young children went off to Brazil as Christian missionaries. The idea was that they'd work with the Pinahá people, hunter-gatherers, who lived on a riverbank in the Amazon. But the trouble was, rather than converting the Pinahá to Christianity, he lost his faith. Though unable to admit it even to his family, he went on working as a missionary for several years. Daniel has now written a book about his life, and he told me first about the Pinahá.
The Pinahá are an indigenous people of the Amazon, of about 350 people that are spread out along the Maisi River. I originally went to the Pinahá as a missionary, and then after that got interested in their language and went on to do a PhD in linguistics and remained with them and worked with them off and on for a number of years. In the last several years, I've been working exclusively as a linguist rather than a missionary.
When you were there as a Christian missionary, were you actively trying to convert them? I mean, how did that work?
I would start to learn the language and then translate portions of the Bible into the language and talk to individual Pinahá about my faith and what I thought God was, and then they would talk back to me about what their views of the world were, and I noticed that their views were very different from mine or any that I had heard of.
Because your wife was the daughter of missionaries, wasn't she? Is this something that the two of you had always wanted to do, to go as missionaries?
Yes, we met in high school, and when we met, we both decided that we wanted to be missionaries back in the Amazon after we married. We were both very, very strong in our faith, and I, in particular, as a new convert, was probably stronger in it in some respects, at least overtly, than she was.
Nonetheless, it's a heck of a big decision to take a family to live there, because you had three children.
That's right, we had three children. Our son Caleb was 9 months old, our daughter Christine was 4 years old, and our daughter Shannon was 7 years old. My daughters got on quite well with the Pinahá girls and often would go off with them in canoes and pick berries or fruit. And my son was so young, but as he got older, he also got along really well with Pinahá boys. It wasn't until a year or so later that we started getting malaria and some other bad things happened, threatening things that made the children a little bit more afraid of going into the village.
Was there any hostility from the tribe?
In the first year that we were there, we spent almost a full year there, and the tribe wasn't quite sure what we were there to do. They had some idea, but then Brazilian river traders who were used to exploiting their labor didn't like us there because they thought we would interfere with the source of free labor. So a Brazilian paid the Pinahá to kill us, and I woke up at midnight with the Pinahá talking about how they were going to kill us, and fortunately I spoke the language well enough to know that. But they apologized quite a bit after that, and we felt we could trust them, and we got along really well with them even after that. But I would say right now that some of those very men who threatened to kill us back in 1980 are some of my best friends, and I think that there are Pinahá who would risk their lives for me, and there are Pinahá who've put themselves to great inconvenience and danger to help me at different times when I or someone in my family was sick. So we are now, some of them even call us ahaige, which is the Pinahá word for sibling, and it shows acceptance.
You then, as you say, got fascinated by their language and the whole business of linguistics. And at the same time, your own faith began to fade, didn't it?
Yes, there were a number of reasons for me to start questioning my faith. I mean, I was now into linguistics and meeting Brazilian intellectuals and talking to them. I didn't come from a Christian home. There were a number of things that led me to doubt. But the real confrontation with my faith was seeing how well adjusted to their environment the Pinahá were, how happy they were, and their constant demand for evidence. When I would tell them stories about Jesus, they would ask me things like, well, how tall is he, and what color is he? And when I said, well, I've never actually seen him, they said, well, what are you doing telling us about someone you've never even seen? Pinahá don't do that. They believe in various different kinds of beings. They have belief in spirits, but these are all things that they see. If you ask a Pinahá, what did a spirit look like, they can describe that spirit exactly for you and tell you where it was that they saw it.
So did you lose your faith altogether, do you think?
Yes, I did eventually. It was very difficult at first, and I felt, as some people in the New Testament are recorded as having felt, that they just needed to pray more to get their faith back. And I struggled with that for quite some time, hoping that my faith would return and knowing that the consequences of announcing to my friends and family and the churches that were supporting us, announcing to them that I had lost my faith was going to have severe repercussions for me. It was a shock to many people who had given money towards the conversion of the Pitahā. You know, what happened to Dan? He seemed so strong in his faith. And for my family in particular, it was a tremendous shock. My three children and my ex-wife, Karen, are all very strong in their beliefs, but they found it extremely difficult to accept me, even though they had seen this coming for some time, I suspect. When I actually announced it was an extremely difficult and traumatic time for everyone.
And what happened? What did they do?
You know, I guess when you're going through this entire process of how do I tell them and they're struggling, it probably manifests itself in many ways in your personality, so that, you know, I suspect that I seem to be changing to them and becoming some other person. But the effect is that now only one of my children talks to me, and it led to a divorce from my wife, Karen.
Did you feel that maybe you should have kept it quiet at times?
Well, I mean, that's why I kept it quiet for all those years, is because I was afraid of exactly that happening. But it reached a point where I felt that I was being dishonest. I felt that I had to make that stand.
You've run into a fair bit of controversy on your way, on this journey. I mean, for example, there's a dispute you've had with a lot of experts over the nature of languages, and this stems from your feelings about the Pinahā language. Also, you were accused at one point of being a racist. Now, what was all that about?
Oh, I was accused of being a racist because for two reasons. One, Noam Chomsky had claimed that all human languages had certain characteristics that I was claiming.
He's the linguistic expert.
The number one linguist probably in the world, based at MIT, Massachusetts Institute of Technology. And his very influential theory claimed that all languages had to have certain characteristics. Therefore, if I claimed that Pinahā did not have those characteristics, one consequence, if you were a defender of that particular theory, was to say, well, then you're claiming that they're not humans, that they're subhuman in some way, when in fact I would say that that just means that theory is wrong. And then the other reason was the New Yorker magazine came out, and they had a very fine photo essay about the Pitahā. But one of the photos in there was a Pitahā girl and her hand next to a monkey hand. The New Yorker photographer had been fascinated by the fact that the little children like to eat monkey hands. But it was misconstrued by people to say that I, in some way, was insinuating that the Pitahā were like monkeys. And so this was a very unfortunate misreading, and anyone who knows how magazines work knows that I would not have ever seen the photos until the magazine was released, so I couldn't have had any control over that in any case.
It's a row, though, that's had effect on your work, isn't it?
Yes, it's definitely affected my work. I mean, people have written to the Brazilian authorities to say that Dan's a racist. He's trying to say that these people are not really fully developed humans. I'm talking to Brazilian authorities and hoping that this will be resolved. They're always afraid of foreigners coming in and not having the proper perspective on their indigenous peoples.
In the meantime, can you work with the tribe?
I'm unable to work with the Pitahā right now. I mean, it's mitigated to some degree by the fact that I have data that I've collected over 30 years that could keep me busy for the next 30 years. It's been now a year since I've been to the village, and that's the longest period of time that I haven't seen them in over 30 years. And even when I'm gone as much as 6 months, when I come back, they're very upset. They want to know where I've been. They talk to me about all the things that they needed me for while I was gone. And so I know that they're missing me and wondering what's happening right now and perhaps thinking that I've abandoned them. They certainly don't feel any effects of the publicity. All they know is that suddenly, from me being there with them frequently, they haven't seen me in over a year.
When you look back on the many years you did spend with the Pitahā, what's the best memory?
The best memory is just, the end of a good day's work in the village when you're sitting there having a cup of coffee with the men as the sun is setting and the bright orange light of the Amazon sun is lighting up the trees and the river's going by slowly, just sitting there and appreciating where you're at and what a rare privilege it is to be with these people and to be learning from them and to have the experience of the Amazon, and it is indescribably pleasant to be with them under these circumstances.
And looking back, any regrets?
No, I don't really have any regrets. I mean, we can never predict the twists and turns of our lives, and I certainly would have never thought starting out 30 years ago that I would wind up having the beliefs and the linguistic theories and the relationships to people that I have today. But that's life, and we can't predict it. We just have to do the best we can each day.
Daniel Everett, now Professor of Linguistics at Illinois State University, and his book's called Don't Sleep, There Are Jaguars.